Chapter 6. Can you help me? You've seen how social engineers trick people by offering to help. Another favorite approach turns the tables. The social engineer manipulates by pretending he needs the other person to help him. We can all sympathize with people in a tight spot, and the approach proves effective over and over again in allowing a social engineer to reach his goal. The Out-of-Towner. A story in Chapter 3 showed how an attacker can talk a victim into revealing his employee number. This one uses a different approach for achieving the same result, and then shows how the attacker can make use of that information. Keeping up with the Joneses. In Silicon Valley, there is a certain global company that shall be nameless. The scattered sales offices and other field installations around the world are all connected to that company's headquarters over a WAN, a wide area network. The intruder, a smart, feisty guy named Brian Atterby, knew it was almost always easier to break into a network at one of the remote sites, where security is practically guaranteed to be more lax than at headquarters. The intruder phoned the Chicago office and asked to speak with Mr. Jones. The receptionist asked if he knew Mr. Jones's first name. He answered, "I had it here. I'm looking for it." "How many Joneses do you have?" She said, "Three. Which department would he be in?" He said, "If you read me the names, maybe I'll recognize it." So she did. "Barry, Joseph, and Gordon." "Joe, I'm pretty sure that was it," he said. "And he was in which department?"
"Business development."
"Fine. Can you connect me, please?" She put the call through. When Jones answered, the attacker said, "Mr. Jones, hi, this is Tony in payroll. We just put through your request to have your paycheck deposited directly to your credit union account." "What? You've got to be kidding. I didn't make any request like that. I don't even have an account at a credit union." "Oh, damn. I already put it through." Jones was more than a little upset at the idea that his paycheck might be going to someone else's account, and he was beginning to think the guy at the other end of the phone must be a little slow. Before he could even reply, the attacker said, "I better see what happened. Payroll changes are entered by employee number. What's your employee number?" Jones gave the number. The caller said, "No, you're right. The request wasn't from you then." They get more stupid every year, Jones thought. "Look, I'll see it's taken care of. I'll put in a correction right now, so don't worry." "You'll get your next paycheck okay," the guy said reassuringly. A business trip. Not long after, the system administrator in the company's Austin, Texas sales office received a phone call. "This is Joseph Jones," the caller announced. "I'm in business development at corporate. I'll be in town for the week at the Driscoll Hotel. I'd like to have you set me up with a temporary account so I can access my email without making a long-distance call." "Let me get that name again and give me your employee number," the sysadmin said. The false Jones gave the number and went on. "Do you have any high-speed dial-up numbers?" "Hold on, buddy, I gotta verify you in the database." After a bit, he said, "Okay, Joe, tell me, what's your building number?" The attacker had done his homework and had the answer ready. "Okay," the sysadmin told him, "you convinced me." It was as simple as that. The sysadmin had verified the name Joseph Jones, the department, and the employee number, and Joe had given the right answer to the test question. "Your username's going to be the same as your corporate one, J.B. Jones," the sysadmin said, "and I'm giving you an initial password of change me." Mitnick message. Don't rely on network safeguards and firewalls to protect your information. Look to your most vulnerable spot. You'll usually find that vulnerability lies in your people. Analyzing the con. With a couple of phone calls and 15 minutes of time, the attacker had gained access to the company's wide area network. This was a company that, like many, had what I refer to as candy security. After a description first used by two Bell Labs researchers, Steve Belevin and Stephen Cheswick. They described such security as a hard, crunchy shell with a soft, chewy center, like an M&M candy. The outer shell, the firewall, Belevin and Cheswick argued, is not sufficient protection, because once an intruder is able to circumvent it, the internal computer systems have soft, chewy security. Most of the time, they are inadequately protected. This story fits the definition. With a dial-up number and an account, the attacker didn't even have to bother trying to defeat an internet firewall. And once inside, he was easily able to compromise most of the systems on the internal network. Through my sources, I understand this exact ruse was worked on one of the largest computer software manufacturers in the world. You would think the systems administrators in such a company would be trained to detect this type of ruse. But in my experience, nobody is completely safe if a social engineer is clever and persuasive enough. Speakeasy security. In the old days of speakeasies, those Prohibition-era nightclubs where so-called bathtub gin flowed, a would-be customer gained admission by showing up at the door and knocking. After a few moments, a small flap in the door would swing open and a tough, intimidating face would peer out. If the visitor was in the know, he would speak the name of some frequent patron of the place. "Joe sent me" was often enough. Whereupon the bouncer inside would unlatch the door and let him in. The real trick lay in knowing the location of the speakeasy, because the door was unmarked, and the owners didn't exactly hang out neon signs to mark their presence. For the most part, just showing up at the right place was about all it took to get in. The same degree of safekeeping is, unhappily, practiced widely in the corporate world, providing a level of non-protection that I call speakeasy security. Lingo. Speakeasy security. Security